Welcome to PhotoDump.
This is a podcast by and for working photographers.
With
Ren
and Jen.
I feel like I haven't talked to you in
forever and ever. I know.
What's been going on?
I have a couple of bids that I'm working on, but I have no clue what the odds are. I feel like I had a really slow June, but I am shooting this week, 2 days, so I have that going for me. I'm actually working with Tyler for the first time.
Oh my God, is he assisting you?
Yeah.
Shout out Ty. We love you. He's so great.
Yeah, so I'm going to work with him while David's rendezvousing in Japan and Korea.
I'm actually working with David next week and I'm excited to see him.
Nice. Yeah. What are you working on next week?
It's a small little shoot, but I'm excited because Marion is food styling and Sam Margarita's prop styling. So it's a good team, even though the shoot itself is on the tinier side, but it's still life product based type of shoot.
Cool.
Yeah. And the creative direction is really fun. So I'm excited. I had a couple of shoots in June that I actually didn't tell you about. There was some out of pocket things that I think could be interesting to talk about.
Yeah. What happened?
Nothing crazy, but I do think it's kind of maybe helpful for people to hear. Maybe. I don't know. But I had that shoot, you know, it's for a big brand, but their rates are fixed. So it's not like when you and I are bidding on a job and we create a budget that works for the creative and then we input all our numbers or our agents input all our numbers or producers or whatever. So this is already a fixed rate card and their rates are unfortunately for the crew are really outdated. And so I was like, I'm just going to have to just take it out of my fee.
Maybe I think it would be helpful for people listening what those rates are.
It was $500 for a Digitech. It was $400 for a first assistant and $400 for a second assistant, which I don't know why they have the same rate.
Do they get a prep day?
No, I had to do all the prep. I had to handle all the equipment. So this time around, I was like, Robin, I need to pay people out of, like, this has to come out of our fee. Based off last year's rates, I was like, okay, I'm going to get a second assistant for $450. I'm going to get a first for $600, which is still, like, not totally ideal. I'd like to be on the lowest end, $650 nowadays, if not $750. And then for the Digi, I did $650. And that was it. So that was out of pocket.
But you felt like your rate was all right.
I felt like my rate was for like 5 days worth of work. I felt like it was fair to like lose a few hundred bucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
So that's that. And then the second out of pocket expense is totally just like I don't have to do it, but we just decided to do it. So Sam and I did a shoot like 2 weeks ago that was a stills and video shoot. And I'm super excited about it. Usually if I'm doing a stills and motion shoot, it's priority motion with like we have to light for video because video is such a key component. And then stills is kind of on the back burner that I'm shooting as I'm directing. This time it was flipped. Mm. So they just wanted to capture video footage like on the go, but we didn't budget for a video shoot. So Sam, like I had a my first assistant is also a gaffer, so he was really helpful in kind of like throwing in a light, like literally one light because it was super cloudy that day, if you remember.
Yeah,
it ended up looking great, but they gave us like $150 to license a song, and I don't know if you've ever licensed music. You can get a song for $150, but it's all just awful. Like so bad. And yesterday, Sam was putting together just like a super, super rough assembly of his selects for 2 minutes. And he showed it to me and he was listening to a new Jamie XX song. And I was like, oh, my God, like, it's so good. I wish we could just he was like, we should just hire a composer next time. And then we were both like, maybe we just go out of pocket because the footage ended up being really fun. And it and we're doing a director's cut, which is so rare. Like, we're not getting any notes. Like, we can just do whatever we want.
Oh, yeah.
So I think it's a good opportunity to just pay out of pocket and hire someone to make some custom music. So
yeah,
I think we're gonna do it.
Do it. I mean, I feel like also part of the way you can think about that is like sort of a paid test, because you're really happy with everything so far. And so you're just stepping it up a little bit.
Yeah.
With some paying out of pocket for a little bit. I think that sounds great.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm super excited. So Sam spoke with a composer guy that he knows this morning, and I'm really excited because I've never actually worked with a composer. I mean, not that there's that much time. He literally has like 24 hours to send us something because the cut is due. It's supposed to be locked by like tomorrow night.
Are you guys going to tell the client that you guys?
Yeah, we'll tell them. I mean, I'm not going to expect them to reimburse us for it, but I definitely want
to. So they understand.
Yeah. And I want them to make sure that this person will be credited, obviously. I mean, we'll credit them, of course, but I think it's going to be cool. So I think it's important to note that out of pocket expenses are really important sometimes. And, you know, if you really like care about your team or you really care about the project, if you have a little bit of savings, I think it goes a long way.
Yeah, that's awesome. I can't wait to see it.
Me too. And we finally have a color budget, which is great. So we're working with Jinx to do color on the video, which is
cool.
I've actually never, this is the first time that one of my videos is actually going to be colored. It's usually we do our own color and it's like, fine, but this will be profesh.
How exciting.
Yeah.
All good things.
But yeah, other than that, I have nothing coming up. Had a busy June, and now I'm kind of excited for maybe a slow summer.
I feel like there's some good segues here that people asked questions about.
Let's do it.
Kind of start in.
Well, I guess we'll be doing an AMA. Thanks to everyone that asked really great questions.
Yeah. In less than I posted like last night.
We're like, what are we going to talk about tomorrow?
I mean, I had, you know, we have a few things we can talk about, but I felt like a lot of them weren't maybe necessarily a full episode worth of content. So I think this is a great way to kind of answer some of the quick fire questions. And some of them are more complicated, but you just talked about that. And so I was like, oh, it's maybe a good segue to talk about crediting your team. Somebody messaged us on Instagram asking us our two cents on tagging and adding your team on Instagram for who you worked with on a job.
Yeah, do you want to just read the question?
Yeah. It seems like some don't want to give credit because they don't want others to hire their crew, and the others think it's only fair to give everyone credit where credit is due. Would you consider doing a post or talk about an episode with your two cents?
Such a good question. I actually didn't even realize that was a thing. I mean, I've come across it in very minor situations. Mm-hmm. Did I tell you that story where I'm trying to remember what it was? I was like, oh yeah, a food stylist friend asked a photographer that she works with for on behalf of another photographer if she had any recommendations for a first assistant. Because I think she was like new to LA or something, or maybe here on a job, and she wouldn't tell her.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I feel like I've had not a personal situation, but I've heard something similar where a food stylist, like she posted, not the photographer, the food stylist posted something, but then didn't credit her assistant. And I think she was upset about that. And then
the assistant was upset.
And then also on the flip side, though, I think I've also heard stories where like the assistant posted a photo, but then didn't credit the lead.
The lead. Yeah.
Which is definitely wrong, I would say.
I've heard of that actually, where an assistant had a lead's work on their portfolio.
Yeah.
That's a big, big no-no.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like if you put it, I still think that's weird, but I can see if you don't have any work and you're trying to show, but I think it needs to be clearly stated that you were an assistant on this team or that you worked on this project. Because I mean, I think like Digitex, sometimes they, you know, have stuff like that, but it's clearly labeled who was a team.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So I think it's fair to say both Ren and I credit everyone on her team.
I mean, as long as we can, I can find them on Instagram. I feel bad. Like sometimes I can't find them, but I do go through all of my call sheets and I like painstakingly like write out everyone's name.
I mean, I think for me, I just feel like so much of what we do, especially now, it's like they're a vital part of the team. And I want to make sure that they know they're appreciated and that, you know, they were part of making this come to life. Mm-hmm. I guess just like, you know, movies. Yeah. Everyone gets credited, right? Yeah,
totally.
So yeah, whenever I can, I like to credit everyone and tag them. I can see like, you know, if you have like a really good verse that you don't, you know, you don't want giving up, but us at the same time,
no, they have to work.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think too, at the same time, a really good assistant is going to find work.
Yeah.
Like, not because you tag them. They're great and they're going to find work. And I also think there's a part of it, at least for me, it's like, I want to uplift my team. I think it's different if your assistant doesn't only wants to assist, right? And doesn't ever want to do anything beyond that. But if they do want to do stuff beyond that, you know, you just want to like make them shine.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I love sharing, aside from crediting, I love sharing people's contacts. Like whenever you ask me or like a friend asks or anything for recommendations, I always send them people's contact because I love working with them so much that I know that they're going to bring so much to the table, like wherever they go. And also, man, like people got to work. Like, how could you kind of like be in the way of someone making a living?
You're gatekeeping.
Yeah, you're totally gatekeeping. I think it's a little messed up. And also, I think if they have a solid team that they work with all the time and they're worried it's going to get broken up. I mean, I have a first assistant that I love working with who is super loyal to his main photographers. Mm-hmm. And I totally respect that. I mean, he's like turned down work for me just because he's still on hold for like his main photographers. If you have a good solid team, like they will probably prioritize you anyway. They work with photographers that are shooting all the time. Like, of course, they're going to prioritize them. So it's really just kind of, I feel like it comes maybe from a place of insecurity where they don't want, I don't know, like maybe like their trade secrets or something coming out. But I just feel like everyone more or less does this, has like, this is the same equipment with like more or less similar approaches, like maybe with a little bit of difference. But I feel like if you're at the point where you're working with lead for like lighting techs, essentially, you're not really involved in the nitty gritty of the lighting in the way that you are on smaller shoots where you are maybe working with a first assistant that you're kind of like overseeing. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like on those bigger shoots, like you just tell them the like the lighting that you want and then they know, they like go off and make it happen and then you tweak it together.
So
I don't know. I think it just a little bit comes from a place of insecurity. I think. Am I going to get canceled for saying that?
You're canceled, Ren. Bye, Ren. But yeah, I think it's fair to credit. I mean, you know, on my website, I don't have credits on there, but
I have credits on my website.
Yeah, I think it's more, it's not that I don't want to, it's more of a design thing and I have to like redesign before that's going to happen. And that's not happening anytime soon. Sorry, guys. But you can go back on Instagram and find credits if you'd like. Yeah. So that was one of the questions I thought was really interesting. And on the topic of your crew, we had some questions about how to reach out to assist a photographer that they've been trying for a really long time and they don't know what they're doing wrong. And then also additionally, a photographer who's re-entering the photography industry after having kids. And she's like, do moms assist? Yes, moms assist.
And shoot.
And shoot.
I mean, you could really be like, there's no age cutoff. I mean, I'm kind of going through this, like, I feel like, what age bracket are we in? Are we middle-aged?
I mean, I'm turning 40 this year, so I'm like in a different, I feel like you're still under 40, so it's like a different.
Yeah, but we're close in age. So I feel like I've just been going through this whole like age-related midlife crisis where I'm just like, I'm old. But I was just talking to my mom who just turned 60, I was like lamenting about how I just feel so old with like certain things that I am working on. And she was just like, oh my God, I remember when I was 40, I felt so old. And now I would like 40 was just is like the beginning of your life, essentially. Yeah.
I feel like in your 20s, at least for me, in my 20s, it was like, cool. But then once I started turning like 30s and mid 30s, I was like, life is like a little bit more exciting in some way. I do think life gets better. It's just figuring out, you know, there's little humps and roller coasters, coasters in the way.
For sure. And I mean, there's like societal pressures, right? Mm-hmm. Like I imagine this mom feels like she wasn't, maybe she took like a 5-year break or something, whatever it is. But yeah, no, I think moral of the story is you're never too old. On the flip side, like sometimes I feel worried about hiring someone too young because, you know, like it's a different work ethic. It's, you know, just things like that. Not to say that I wouldn't work with someone who's like 20, but I guess going into that, I think for reaching out to photographers, based on the emails that I get from people looking to assist, I think it's really helpful to present yourself as what kind of assistant level you could be. So if you're like going re-entering the workforce or new in the photography game, like I would not pitch yourself as a first assistant. Mm-hmm. I would personally just be really transparent about your capabilities, and or if you don't have any, then maybe you could be like a third assistant on a job. But I think it's just really laying out what you can and cannot do and what you know.
Yeah.
And how comfortable you are. And also, I feel like also reinforcing the fact that you're a very fast learner if you are.
Yeah. I mean, I think all of those things. I also think, you know, if you haven't been in the industry for a while, but yeah, just reaching out to people and letting them know, you know, what you're capable of, like Ren said, but also that you're open to doing anything. If you just want to be on set, like you don't have to be a photographer's assistant. You could be a PA and that you're on set. And like, at least, you know, if you feel out of touch, right? I also think it's hard because I think you and I both get a lot of assistant emails. And for me, I'm going to go off of somebody. I keep them on a spreadsheet. It's not like I don't save your name. I definitely save your name. But for me personally, I know that I'll go through everyone that I know first and everyone that Ren recommended first before I'm going to go to someone that I have no context over. And that's just, I mean, that's just life. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's not like I save everybody, but usually I will have found someone before I get to that list.
But not to say that it's not possible. Like when I first moved to LA, no one knew me and I did the same thing. I emailed a bunch of people. Obviously I wasn't getting hired because no one knew who the fuck I was.
Yeah.
But there was one magic shoot where it was a massive, huge campaign with like 4 photographers, and the Digitech needed a second Digitech, and it was so last minute. I think I heard he went through like 15 people and no one was available. So I was like the 16th person that he was probably going into that list of like, I don't know who this person is, but I just need someone at this point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I ended up doing like 4 jobs with this team, met a bunch of crew who actually my first assistant and gaffer that I work with a lot now, he was assisting on that job like 6 years ago. So it just, I feel like you just need to get in somewhere at some level and then you just make connections.
Yeah. And I think that's also to say, besides photographers, you can reach out to other assistants because sometimes I am just like to my first, you figure out the team.
Yeah.
You're my first and you figure out everybody else. So I think also making it's like not just thinking about the photographers, but thinking about the assistants that you could be potentially working next to. I mean, not to name drop, but like if you have worked with somebody that other photographer might know, you know, I would check with them and, you know, they could be a reference for you. And then you could also drop it. You know, I've had some people reach out and like, oh, I've worked with so-and-so and so on the Apostrophe roster. You know, I saw that you were on there. Would love to work with you. So, you know, it gives me something to go off of. And then like, if I do come down to that list, I can go ask, you know, whoever on my roster, what was it like working with them?
Yeah, no, that's super good advice. I think I didn't even think about that, reaching out to other assistants. That's great.
I don't know if we want to do this, like a quick fire of this.
Well, let me read the question. Yeah, okay. The question is, a breakdown of a quote for a job for a commercial shoot and a smaller client shoot, no agency representation, line by line, by category, and what each category entails, not necessarily dollar amounts. I want to present myself more professionally and maximize my potential earnings, but know there are things I'm missing in my quotes, like equipment, creative fee, etc. Can we include our own styling fee if we're sourcing props and styling on our own?
Yeah, I would say for the commercial stuff, I would look at a photoeditor.com. They have great line-by-line breakdowns. I feel like just based on what you're saying here, you're probably in this weird middle tier where you're not getting the commercial stuff and maybe you're doing some of the own styling, and that's why you're asking about that. And I feel like that is going to come down to you using your best judgment on your client. I definitely think you should try, but like not every client is going to be able to afford that. And then if you are affording that, then you would probably have like a commercial job and you would have a stylist. But I can see where there's smaller clients that are a little higher end tier, but maybe you can have a food stylist but not have a prop stylist. And in that situation, I would definitely, of course, charge for the props that you're renting.
And charge prep days to source those props.
Yeah, I would charge prep days for that. And then maybe you can just bump your fee like slightly higher. And then, but again, I think that's using your best judgment, because not, you know, at the end of the day, the client might just only have, you know, $3,000. So, you know, then you got to take it and run with it.
Yeah, I agree with bumping your fee for your also styling. And then maybe in the text below, sometimes on estimates, you have the main quote and then underneath there could be a description. So you could write for photography and styling, so they know that that includes both instead of like doing it separate.
I think there's I feel like there's a few ways of thinking about line iteming your estimates. I think in the very beginning, I just put a flat rate, but I know other photographers, like let's say you're the only photographer, it's a small job that you're doing and you're doing everything, and you might just put 3,000. But if you line item everything that you're doing, and then maybe you put a discount at the bottom so that they know, you know, actually, you know, this is what all of that includes. Maybe it's easier for the client to understand, oh, she's really not just clicking the photo and editing it. She's sourcing the props, you know, and paying for props, styling or whatever. But
providing your own equipment, most likely.
Providing your own, yes, equipment.
Yeah.
But yeah, once you're into the commercial level, you can have a line item for literally everything. Mm-hmm. The meals, the equipment, your camera, the lenses, the stylist, a prep day. I mean,
stylist kits, a kit fee,
yeah. All the things. But definitely check out a photo editor.
Hard drives, retouching. Hard drives,
yes, retouching. Yeah.
So many
literally
things.
Any line item that you can think of.
Expendables, just yes. Miscellaneous things that pop up.
Afternoon coffee. But yeah, I mean, that's definitely like a different tier of shoot.
Yeah, but I think in general, you and I both, correct me if I'm wrong, lived on a photo editor's pricing and negotiation section when we used to do our own estimates.
Yeah.
And I would not copy his verbatim. It's just a great reference point to see what all can go into a shoot. And he has estimates from all these different types of shoots. And I feel like I would just use it as a guideline for, okay, this is how much maybe like a top tier photographer is charging for this. What do I feel comfortable knowing that number? Like, what do I feel comfortable charging for? I feel like that is fluid, but as far as crew rates, like they're pretty standard unless you're working with maybe more entry level stylists. who might be willing to, you know, bump down their rates.
Yeah. I mean, I think a photo editor too, he talks about different scales of jobs. Like, you know, he'll say North America or just Southeast, you know. So I think it's definitely super helpful. I remember I used to look at a bunch of different estimates and I would put them all side by side to compare like what all the differences were to just break it down.
We'll add his link to the website, to the show notes.
Pricing yeah.
Negotiations. That's a great question. So I'm doing a, what is it called? I'm teaching at a workshop in November. I'm really excited. Teaching at the Rev workshop in Seattle. And I'm going to do this whole thing of basically a shoot from start to finish, starting from inquiry to the creative call to bidding and estimating. And one of the things that I want to talk about is like an entire, like pulling up an actual estimate that we've submitted and gotten approved and just walk through. Cause some of them are like, I'm looking at one right now. It's 4 pages long. Yeah. So there's so much stuff that goes into it and it's just numbers. But I think like, what's a good summary? Like here, okay. As a reference point, we're bidding on this job that I think is going to, let me just double check. It's a 2-day shoot. Yes, it's a 2-day shoot and a scout. And for crew, for example, our total crew number is $52,380. That's just for crew.
Yeah.
And that's for shoot days. Obviously, stylists get prep days. My assistants get prep days for the scout and equipment. So it's just, it's everyone's crew days range from, based on like when they're needed, I think it's from 2 to 6 days on here. And that also includes payroll and workers' comp, which is $2,970. So that's included in that total, which everyone should be charging if you live in California.
Yep. By law, you should By be law. Anyways. Whether or not you do or don't.
Which is, I guess, a good segue into our next question.
Why start an S Corp for your photography business? And what are the benefits and drawbacks over an LLC? Is it hard to set up or maintain? I think we just had a lot of questions like overall with that topic. And
we are not experts.
Yeah, I was like, let me preface by saying we are not experts. I never had an LLC until my agent made me get one. I wasn't an LLC. I just was like me, just yeah, doing business as myself.
Oh, because I got an LLC taxed as an S Corp when AB5 became a thing in 2020.
Yeah, I mean, I basically it coincided. Signed.
Yeah,
yeah. It was a little bit of both. Like I was probably gonna do it soon, but I didn't. But you can have an LLC and then not be an S Corp. So mm-hmm. I think. Again, not an expert, but I think if you're an LLC, you're just protecting yourself.
Your personal assets.
From your business. And I think regardless of how you do your taxes, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter. But as long as you have an LLC, then you're fine. So like when you go to the bank and you have your LLC, though, you can just put like doing business as your LLC or whatever. But you don't have to. When you file for your taxes, it's just like under your personal.
Right. Yeah. So if you're going to do an LLC, I mean, I think in general, even if you don't have an LLC, I think it's super helpful to have a separate bank account for your business. I think it's easier to kind of understand the whole like money flow when you have an LLC or an S Corp, because like before I had an LLC, all I had was a separate credit card that I charged all of my like photo related things onto. And then I just had really obnoxious spreadsheets that I would just send to my CPA at the end of the year. But with an LLC, like it took me a while to realize, oh, I shouldn't have all of my money from my jobs just sitting in my business bank account, because if worst case scenario, I get sued, like if I have, you know, a ton of money in there, that is all part of my business and it's, you know, you're liable for it. But if you have like 20 grand in your business account and you get sued for a lot, you're only liable for, I mean, I don't know how like lawsuits work, But, you know, the less you have. But
technically, I think that's like part of why you would have an LLC. So, but I think in general, whenever you have a business, whether you're an LLC, S Corp or not, you should open a separate banking account, and probably helpful just to have a separate credit card. But that's what advice Ren and I would say. Ren uses QuickBooks. I use FreshBooks. You know, in the very beginning, I did all my invoicing by hand, like in InDesign, because it was beautiful. And you gotta just go ahead and just cut that shit right now.
I still do that.
Just go ahead and stop it right now. I also think one of the reasons why I went with FreshBooks is because their design is a little bit nicer. But yeah, I just use FreshBooks for invoicing, and all you can basically put in your credit cards and your bank account, and it'll pull all your expenses. And so it's really easy to create an expense report without having an Excel spreadsheet, which I did. But once I switched over, it was a game changer.
Yeah. When I started the S Corp, it was a nightmare, total nightmare to learn QuickBooks. I was just like, this sucks. I feel like it took me like 6 months of hair pulling. And luckily it was during the pandemic, so I had nothing else to do. It's a really complex software that's meant for CPAs and accountants. And so I realized that I don't have to know the whole thing. I just had to figure out like the few little elements that I needed to use from that software, which is inputting information from my credit card and labeling it into categories, like is it a meal, is it a travel related expense, is it advertising, is it office, is it whatever, and just logging that.
But QuickBooks has categories for you already, right? You just got to select them. And you can make your own?
It has categories already, but I made my own. Okay. I have a lot of categories with subcategories just because I'm anal and I just need to like know everything's like organized exactly, because I also don't know a lot about tax laws. And I feel like if the more transparent I am, the more my CPA can just be like, oh, like she really means that. Like I can just lump this all in together.
Right.
So that took me a while. And then it's linked to my business card and my husband's business card because we share an S Corp because we have a business together. And then our business bank account. And so like any checks that come in, any payments that we receive, that all goes from our business account, and it's easy to log on the back end, and it just like balances your in and out. Yeah. And then I had to like let go of it. I just have a system. Now it takes me about an hour a month to just go through and just log everything, update my invoices, approve things, and then at the end of the year my CPA has access and he just logs on and he does his whatever and he tells me how I'm doing.
Yeah, I mean, I can't speak for QuickBooks because I don't use that. I would say QuickBooks is probably more of industry standard, but I know our accountant has some people on FreshBooks and he told me I didn't have to change, so yay, I'm not changing because all of my hard work and money is already like organized in there. And I like being able to see it, but it's cool because once you are set up and then you can start to see, you know, your growth over years and, you know, how much you're making from a certain client. You can see how much you're making just from all your clients. You can really like get really granular and see spreadsheets on that if that's your thing. Like I really enjoy seeing it. So I definitely think it's worth doing. It is, you know, it does cost money, but I think at the end of the day, I honestly think it'll save you money, save you time.
But I have to say, I remember when I was speaking. So our CPA is Ben Sargent. He's amazing. I think he's like the best tax person ever. He makes it fun. I remember when I was asking him about it, he did say that for an S Corp or an LLC, there is a sweet spot where I think if you make below a certain amount of money, I think he said, I feel like I want to say below 60 grand, it's not worth it based on the fees that go into maintaining an S Corp and LLC. And if you make too much money, which I don't know what that number is, I'm clearly not there, then I think you need like a you need some sort of different like finance situation. I don't really know. So the drawbacks are that it costs money to maintain it. So I think, what is it? It's like $800 or $900 a year.
Yeah. Well, I think for an S corp, we have to pay $800 to be an S corp every year, regardless of if you make money or not.
Yes. On top of that, your CPA, which if you have an S corp, you should have one. If you're running a business, I think at a certain point, it's helpful to have someone do your taxes for you. But your CPA will also charge you more money because he's doing double taxes. He's doing taxes on your business and your personal. So there's a definite increase in maintaining those things.
Yeah.
That's the drawback. That's the only drawback.
Yeah. I mean, you have like payroll. You have to payroll yourself. So then there's like a payroll company that you have to pay, I don't know, like 30.
Mine's like 45 or $49
a month. So there's definitely like expenses, but
QuickBooks and FreshBooks is a subscription that you have to pay. Yeah, it's a lot.
You save money at the end of the day. And we just trust that we save money.
Yeah, there's like a whole pass-through thing that you could be doing. So you're like spending money up front and then getting money in the anyway. It's a whole thing that's way complicated for us to explain, even fully understand.
But that's like the quick answer for you. I guess I will just say caveat that like both Ren and I still do our monthly accounting, and then our accountant gets like the annual bulk, but we don't, I mean, some people also
hire a bookkeeper.
Yeah. Like a bookkeeper. So he doesn't do our bookkeeping in that sense. But
also I think the biggest benefit of having an LLC aside from liability, and I don't know if this is the same for LLC, but at least for an S corp, which is why you and I did it, is so that we are no longer individuals. We're being hired. Our company is being hired by another company, so we can't be run through payroll. So that way, because of that,
Be run through, but we shouldn't be run through payroll.
No, we should not. We can't. We technically can't be run through payroll, but some people are a-holes.
Some people still
about
run
it.
Through payroll. Yeah.
I mean, it's a whole thing. It's like it just comes down to liability. No one wants to be liable, but like we cannot be run through payroll as individual as a company. So our company gets paid, and we are still able to write off all of our expenses. Whereas if you are on payroll, I think it's a lot more complicated to write things. Like I think technically you can't write things off if you're on payroll.
Yeah, because you're probably submitting your expenses. So then that's the company is basically writing those expenses off on your behalf.
I mean, I have to say it probably makes your taxes easier if you're just being paid through payroll by everyone. Yeah, I think that was the biggest thing, was taxes are so complicated. And I wanted my CPA to make sure we're saving as much money as humanly possible. And that felt like a S corp was the only way to do it.
And then I think for retirement, you can do, again, not a financial advisor, but I think you should have a Roth IRA. And usually if you have a business, regardless if you're an LLC or an S corp, you can have a SEP IRA. And I feel like with a SEP IRA, you can put in a certain amount every year, and that's based on how much you make. And so you are a CPA at the end of the year, which technically you have till April, not December. So let's say you submit all your paperwork to your CPA in February, and then your CPA will come back to you and tell you that you can put in $1,345 into your SEP IRA, and then you have to go to the bank and do that, and then you basically put it for the previous year, but you have till April 15th or 17th or whatever the tax day is.
Alternatively, if you're making really good money and you're maxing out your Roth, which is I think $6,000 or $6,500.
Well, a SEP IRA, it's based on how much you make. A
Roth IRA has a cap. Like you cannot put in more than $6,500. But a SEP IRA is based on how much money you've made. So you could potentially be putting in 10, 20, $30,000 in there, and that's just going into a like a retirement fund. So you could be like maxing out a lot of these different retirement accounts, not just a Roth IRA, which is like I think everyone should have it as like a starting point, but there is a cap. If you're making more money and you want to put more money away, the Roth IRA will have a cap. Same with a traditional IRA. I personally haven't gotten past the SEP IRA. Like, I know there's all these other things that you could do, like a 401, and you know.
I mean, I feel like the SEP is the best for our scenario as far as like based on the research that I've done. And because I feel like people are curious, my SEP is through Vanguard, but I had it through my bank, Wells Fargo, originally. I just moved from my bank to, I had a financial advisor that I paid at some point. Yeah, because I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. And, you know, I would just, my dad would be like, you need to open a Roth IRA. And then I would like literally just like go to the bank and I'd be like, my dad said I need to open a Roth IRA. Here's the money. And so like the guy there was like, okay, well, what do you want to put it in? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, you tell me. So basically
S&P 500.
Yeah. Like the guy put it in all these things and I was like paying a fee for it. And then now I have a brother-in-law who's really educated in those things. And he's like, get rid of the financial advisor. You're just giving him so much money, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I think regardless of how you do it, I think it's good to have one. And if you have to start with a financial advisor so that he can at least tell you what to do. But there's many articles and things.
You can pay me. I'll be your financial advisor for a starting point. I mean, literally the base thing that you can do to start is just invest that money into an S&P 500. I think that's like, that was what I was told. It just so you don't have to think about like which stock should I like what should I invest in. This is just like, what is it? It's like the 500 most like
biggest companies. But there's probably like a few of them. What's your do you know the code that you do?
Oh no, I log on very very little, but I have my Roth IRAs with Vanguard, and I also have just like an investment account in there too. But I am switching to Schwab because that's where we opened up our SEP IRA, and the user face is a million times better. Yeah. I just haven't done it because it just feels like it's going to be such a like drag to.
Oh yeah. I mean, I basically, when I switched from Wells Fargo to Vanguard, it was just like a really scary thing because also you're not like talking to anybody in person. Yeah. And like, I'm like all this money in my retirement from like when I was at a company, you know, when you're at a company, you have like a 401k. And then when you leave that company, you can put it into Roth or like a traditional Roth. And then you can move that around. But yeah, it's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And you're like, I hope this makes it.
And, you know, compound interest also is like a big thing, which you're making money off of your off of your money as it grows. So I think everyone should do it. I wish we were taught this in school. Like, I didn't start until I think my 30s.
But we should definitely have been on. I think this is something we've wanted to have a more deeper conversation about, but we just haven't had anybody on.
Let's do it. Okay, how do you deal with finances when running your own photography business? I mean, I guess we kind of talked about it.
Yeah.
My biggest approach to anything is to have an emergency fund for my personal self and an emergency fund-ish in my business account. Like I have a number that makes me feel comfortable in my business account, because regardless of whether I'm making any money that month, I have monthly expenses like my company card, my payroll, which is also for myself and my husband, which is like all of our taxes and things like that. I have to have a certain amount of money to know that I can pay everything that I need to pay on a monthly basis. Plus, I mean, like now we are lucky enough to get advances. I would say for me, like 98% of the time, if I'm paying my crew, I get an advance before the shoot starts. But if that advance hasn't cleared yet, I pay my people like the next day after the shoot is done. I used to just like come to set with checks. I just want people to be paid on time. And so I always had to have more money than I needed so that I could take care of the things I need to take care of while I wait for money to come in.
Yeah.
That's my approach.
Yeah. I would say mine is the same. I mean, I really like seeing how you spend your money like every month. Mint is also like a free app that you can go on the computer and you can even like add your partner or whatever, and you guys can see like how much you guys are both making and what you're spending it on, and they'll categorize everything. So like, oh yeah, we spent a whole lot of money on food. But yeah, I think it's just interesting to, it's good to know and interesting to see broken down everything. And yeah. Okay, so one of the questions we got was, do you feel like location is important to becoming a bigger photographer? And or what do you do if you don't have access to a large network? Should I move just for my career success?
Yes.
If you want to move,
the ability to move wherever you want.
I think it also depends on like what you want to do, right? But yeah, probably. Or work as a local.
Yeah, but then that's a expense.
It's so hard, but
I was always of the mindset that I think there's two approaches, right? If you move to a big city, then you're a little fish in a massive pond. Mm-hmm. If you move to a small city and you're awesome, then you're a big fish in a small pond. And I feel like either one works great. But if you are starting out, if you don't have a network, then I think it's better to be a small fish in a big pond because there's just so much more work going around. There's so many more opportunities to network, to meet people, to try different things. I've only ever lived as a working adult in New York and LA, and I truly can't imagine starting a career anywhere else, because I just feel like the amount of opportunities and experiences that come from living in a big city is just invaluable.
Yeah. I guess it also depends on like, I mean, she does say a bigger photographer. So I think bigger is probably subjective to what mm-hmm. you want to do. But like, yeah, if you want to be shooting for Starbucks, then you probably need to be in a bigger city or Seattle. Mm-hmm. But like if you live in Wyoming, yeah, you're probably never going to be like shooting for Coca-Cola.
Unless you're, you know, that one photographer that's just like killing it and well known by everyone. You know yes. what I mean?
Right. But I still feel like a lot of those commercial big things are in bigger cities or like the mid-tier cities.
In my dream of dreams, I will get to a point in my career where I can live anywhere and just fly in for work. Mm-hmm. That would be amazing. I don't know if that's going to happen. Like even
no,
when
I think it's totally possible. I feel like there's a lot of photographers on our roster that don't live in the cities. Like they live.
But do they live close by? I'm talking about moving like somewhere where you have to fly.
I think they fly.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, hell
I think
yeah.
It's possible.
No, I think it's possible, but I think it's hard. Like even I think having a presence in the market that you want to work in is really important. Like even when I left New York, and granted, I was not at the point where I am now in my career, but I remember when I left New York, which was 6 years ago, and I was like, I'm not going to tell anyone that I'm leaving because I still want to fly in for work and work as a local and not be forgotten. And that was fine for like a year and a half, 2 years. But then I was like, wait, and I'm actually like losing a lot of money working as a local.
Yeah.
By that point, I was kind of getting embedded into LA. And I feel like people don't know that I'm from New York. People don't think of me when they're looking for photographers in New York, unless it's, you know, unless it's an agency that my agent or I have a relationship with. So I feel like at a certain point, you're kind of known to be in the market that you live in.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, every now and then you can get like a travel job, but mm-hmm. it's also working as a local in another city.
That's hard.
Unless you have a home there. I mean, airfare is expensive. It's not easy.
Hotels are expensive. And if you don't want to stay at a hotel and you want to, if you have friends to crash in, at the end of the day, it is so hard to crash on a couch after a shoot day.
Yeah.
I mean, because I have friends that still have places in New York, and whenever I go there to work as a local, I do not hit them up to crash because I want like my own bed with my with a bathtub and quiet.
You just want to decompress when you get home.
Yeah. So,
So not saying you should move, but I think you should evaluate what kind of jobs you want and where that looks like.
Yeah. I mean, if you could be a huge wedding photographer anywhere and make a great income and live wherever you want, and you could be the photographer of that area. So yeah, it really just depends on what kind of photography you want to do. I think if you want to be a commercial photographer and you're at the beginning stages of your career, I personally, and I think Jay Chong will agree, I think it is helpful to be in a bigger city. It doesn't have to be the biggest city, but a city that has some sort of...
that has big companies. You know, I'm actually originally from Atlanta, but I didn't really start my photo career until I was in LA. But I mean, I could see myself... I mean, actually, I could not see myself moving to Atlanta, but I think there would be some work in Atlanta should I decide to. I mean, I think movies are getting bigger there. So Coca-Cola is a big client there.
I had a friend move to Atlanta just to work in the grip department on films because it's gotten so big there.
So big. Yeah. So I feel like, you know, Atlanta is not the biggest city. I think Seattle, the Amazon, Starbucks.
Chicago is a good one.
Chicago, you know, those are not huge. I mean, they're big cities, but they're not, you know, LA or New York. Mm-hmm. So,
but I mean, I think if you are determined enough, I think you can do it anywhere. I just think it's easier.
Yes.
Not to say that it's easy. It's all hard. That's a good question, though.
Yeah.
What else?
Let's see. Now we have some bunch of like quick fire ones, I think. Places that working photographers can go for lighting refreshers. I have no idea. I mean, that's not true. I took a course at like the art college in Academy of Arts. Mm-hmm. And I can't even remember. In LA. I don't know that it was a refresher. It was like definitely like a college course that I like took a semester at. YouTube, honestly.
Yeah.
Has a lot of stuff.
YouTube Academy.
YouTube Academy. Pro Photo does have like a lot of videos, and they do, you can buy classes on Profoto, website. I've like seen a few, and that they really break down light. So that's something that I've seen. Yeah. I only know about the Profoto because, I worked with them for a while, and then they started this thing where people uploaded the photos they took and they broke down the lights.
Ooh, that's
so it's
cool.
Actually really interesting. I think it's like,
send it to me too. I want to look at it.
Okay. I will find it. We will link it. But you can go on their website, and people will post, you can even post, Ren, if you wanted to, you can post a photo and you can break down how you, you know, took that photo.
Oh, that's fine.
So it's cool because you can see how your friend did it.
I mean, there's also the Art Schreiber, who we both are obsessed with. He does amazing. I mean, he does massive shoots and he does awesome lighting breakdowns that might not make sense if you don't have a grasp for everything. But if you do understand a little bit of what goes into it, then it's super interesting to see his lighting breakdowns.
Yes. Okay. So it's called Share the Light on Profoto. So if you go to Profoto's website, you can go to learn and then there's Share the Light and then you can see, you can browse the gallery and you can literally see all these different photos. Cause some of these are, a lot of them are user generated, you know, like you or I uploading, but they have, also famous photographers on there that post. And then they also have Profoto Academy and there's different lessons on there. Like Lindsay Adler, that's who I was thinking of. She's that fashion photographer that also does a lot of teaching. Yeah, people just break down the light on there.
I feel like every now and then I come across workshops that you can do. Uh-huh. Some photographers lead workshops.
So that's what we got for you on places to learn light.
I think the best way to learn light is to do your own test shoots and play around and try to make it happen on your own.
Mm-hmm. Someone asked rates and hard numbers.
Oh, yeah.
There's no magic number. I'm sorry.
I mean, we could give rates and hard numbers for
crew, but we've already done that.
We could just do a quick one.
I feel like they're asking for photography rates.
I think photography rates are
could be $2,000 to $25,000
a day.
A day.
Yeah, if you are lucky enough to get prep and scout. I mean, you should definitely be getting scout rates and travel rates, but pre-production days, post-production days are also helpful. Obviously not at your shooting rate, because yes, typically the reason that rates are so high, like if you're doing a $25,000 a day job, that usually includes whatever usage, licensing and usage, yeah, that is requested of you.
Yeah.
But that could be said for the $2,000 a day, yes, rates too. Yes,
that's yeah, for sure.
Should we like super quickly go through crew rates?
Oh, sure.
I can just pull up our last bid. I mean, yeah, like a recent bid that we have photo assistant, $750.
That's second.
That's not that high.
I mean,
this is for an ad job.
Yeah, okay.
This is a big job. Photo assistant, $750. Second photo assistant, $650. Digital tech, $850. Again, this is for an ad job. You can deduct about $100 to $150 for smaller jobs.
Yeah. I mean, I would say first assistant on the very, very low end, $450, $500.
Five? No, you can't go below $500.
If you have to. I mean, I'm saying as a range, like, okay, I guess if we're talking about a commercial job, then no. Yeah, it would not be under $500. Okay, commercial job wise, $500 to $750.
For a big commercial job, I think it's $650 to.
Yeah, $650, I would say.
$800, really. Yeah. okay, let's see. Prop stylist for this one, $1,500. Props, stylist rates are complicated and I don't totally understand. I feel like I need to ask my agent about it. I think that is inclusive of the 20% agent fee.
Yeah.
And I've heard different things where some producers will not list that total number. Like, basically, I feel like if you don't have an agent, you should be getting that 20%. It shouldn't be taken away from you. And I don't totally know how it works on the back end, but I have heard both ways where someone will be pitched like, oh, we have 1200 plus 20%. And then the stylists are like, well, can I get the 20% if I don't have an agent?
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, prop stylist, $1,500. I think I've heard that goes up to like $1,800, depending. Assistant, prop assistants, we have at $500. I've seen it at $600. I've seen it at $400. Second prop stylist assistant, $450.
$400 is low, I think, for a commercial job, though. For yes, an assistant?
For an assistant, yeah, I agree. Food and bev, $1,500. Food stylist assistant, $600. Wardrobe stylist, $1,500. Hair and makeup, $1,500. Everyone has one or two assistants. Producer. Oh, this producer rate feels a little low. $1,000 a day?
Do they have a lot of days?
Seven.
For how many days? Shoot.
Two. Seems a little low.
Maybe they also have some other fees in there.
I actually don't even know what a producer rate is anymore. Do you? Is it $1,000 or is it $1,200?
I feel like it's $1,200, but maybe it could be like sometimes it's negotiated for more, uh-huh, more days, less.
Right, you know, right, right.
Whatever.
There's production managers, production coordinator, PAs.
Yeah.
Is that helpful? I don't know. That's not to say that everyone should be charging these full rates for every level of job.
Yeah. I mean, I will say that I have maybe gotten my first assistant $750 once. Mm-hmm. I would say probably $650, $600.
The average, yeah,
is more what for me.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, I'm just looking at something I did recently. $650, $750, $550 for a second. Yeah.
Cool. Okay. There's some numbers. But also check out our maybe seemingly now outdated episode from last year on crews.
I think we talked about it on crew, and I feel like we've also talked about it. We had another AMA. We might have talked about it on that AMA too.
Okay.
Somebody asked about younger photographers who are still building their. I think they were wanting to know what kind of income they had. I think, again, a photo editor is a great place to look. On his Instagram, he's been sharing people's incomes, and the range is wild.
It is wild.
But I think that's life. So I don't know if that's very helpful, because I think it could be whatever, like it could, you know, you could be a younger photographer and making a lot of money. Like you could be working a lot, you know, like I think most everybody wants to get to a point where you're working less and making more, right?
Yes.
So,
but in the beginning, you're working a lot.
Yeah. And
you're working a lot
for very little. So they could, you know, I think a young photographer who's still building could be making a lot of money, just, you know, not the way they want to be making money.
Yeah. I made like no money when I was first starting out. I think we talked about it, didn't we?
Yeah, we did talk about it. So we talked about it on the, on you and I episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, we talked about it.
Yeah. Episode 23. You can hear about how much money we made when we were first starting out. It was low.
Let's see. More about licensing and stock. I don't know that we could speak to it, but you know who I feel like we should have on to speak about it? She's on your roster. I feel like she did a post about it. Nicole?
Oh my God. I must have missed it.
She posted something on Stocksy. I didn't actually read it. I just saw that she had like a bunch of stock on there. And she wrote something about how she like diversified her income through there. I have stuff on Stocksy that I don't update regularly.
I think that's the hard thing about stock imagery is it takes a long time to update your library. Also, I think it's hard. You can really only put up like test images or images that are out of usage. So it's kind of keeping track of how long your files have been owned by someone. I don't know. I have stock up on Adobe, and I don't think I've updated it in like 3 years.
Have you sold anything though? That's like, I think that's where.
Yeah, in the beginning, I think if you make it a habit, then maybe it's like part of their algorithm or something. In the beginning, when I was re-uploading my library because I moved from one stock account, I can't remember what they were called, to Adobe, I feel like I was generating like some really fun income from it. Not anything crazy, but I was like, oh cool, I made like $1,000 this month from selling some photos. But now I think this year I made like $50.
I feel like in the beginning I made some like extra cash. I'm like, oh, this is nice. I mean, all of the different stock sites also have like different tiers. Stocksy, I feel like, is a pretty budget friendly site. This month I've made $62.
Hell yeah.
I feel like Stocksy is on the lower end of things in terms of like, you know, how you could pay for like a web image for like $10, or I think you can buy out an image and it's obviously more, but not as much as like Adobe probably. Let's see how much. Okay, unlimited print, $300, and you can also do a market freeze. So a market freeze on an image for 6 months would be,
what does 14... that mean, a market freeze?
I think nobody can use that image for 6 months.
Oh, gotcha.
Or like no one can buy the image for 6 months. So that is $1,400. For 5 years, if anyone wanted to buy my image for 5 years, it would be $9,000.
Oh, hell
but,
yeah.
But I think, you know, on the flip side, like Adobe's probably charges significantly more than that. But, you know, you could also buy it for, the cheapest price is $15 for a small image, which is 800 by 600 pixels wide, which is very small.
Yeah, that sounds complicated. But yeah. I guess like once you have it set up, then it's just part of however that company does their bundles or whatever. Uh-huh. Yeah. But I do know a photographer that I think makes a lot of his living just doing stock photography. He's a travel photographer and he travels with the intention of shooting for stock. Yeah. I feel like we didn't give a really good answer, but
yeah, because we don't know the answer.
it's time consuming. I think if you put in the work that you need, then you can definitely make some good money from it.
What else do we got?
Strategies for curating work. I feel like my strategy is to ask other people.
Yeah. I mean, you can hire people. I've never done it, but there are photo editors out there.
I'm always really impressed by people that can curate their own work. I think it's less about feeling attached to certain images and more of just feeling like I like more images than I should. So it's just hard to narrow it down. And then I also get to a place where I feel like because there's so many images that I might want to use, I end up not using any of them because I'm just like, I just don't know, which is why I have like, you know, I feel like I don't even post to Instagram anymore because.
Let's not talk about Instagram. I should post today.
Yeah, I posted something yesterday that I literally was from December. I never posted it because I don't know why. I get in my head about it.
I feel like you're pretty good about posting. I'm on like a month basis.
Yeah, I'm on like one or two times a month, I think, at this point. Yeah. How else do we curate our work? Honestly, I think like having an agent is really helpful because it's really interesting to see your work through their eyes and how they view it. Asking a friend like Jay Chong is always nice.
I think after my last website like revamp, I just like start adding images on there, and now I probably need to go back and like look at everything and like take stuff off, but I don't know how far people are actually scrolling on there. And
when I redid my website, I mean, I think it's been like 3 or 4 years now, but I printed everything that was on my website. It was an ungodly amount of images. I think I printed like 600 images. I mean, I just printed really cheap prints at like CVS or something. I remember I called them because they were like, your images will be done in an hour. And I called them 2 hours later and I was like, hi, I'm checking on the status of my prints. And they're like, oh, we're totally backlogged. Someone just ordered like 600 prints.
Like, that would be me.
I was like, oh, that's me. Sorry. But it's really nice to be able to physically lay them out on the floor and move things around, which is, I think, hard to do on a desktop.
Yeah. So. And I think, you know, if you actually hired someone, I do think they approach it similarly. For whatever that's worth. Jumping into new niches.
I don't know, because I always fantasize about just completely changing my style and then I don't do it. But I think the only way is to just test and put out work, really, and to play around and to find people that want to play around on some new and weird ideas.
Yeah.
Oh, how do we critically evaluate your work and that to evolve your work? I feel like we are all very critical of ourselves. That's like our nature, right? Mm-hmm. I always feel like something could be better. And maybe that's how I critically evaluate my work, is I always think that it could be better. And so I just try to make it better. I don't know.
It's hard. Always trying to improve, I think.
Mm-hmm. And evolving your work, again, I think it always goes testing. Back to testing. Yeah.
Yeah. Testing.
When you have the energy to do it.
Okay. When it comes to direct marketing, who should photographers be reaching out to?
Art directors and art producers.
Creative directors.
What is an art producer? That is a producer that works usually in-house at an agency that's part of the art team that essentially facilitates the creation of the shoot that's given to them by the creative director or art director.
Yeah.
So they are the ones that, you know, usually work with you or your agent to put together an estimate. They're kind of the go-between the creative team and your team. So I think they are the biggest people to outreach to, because they are also the ones that, if the creative department doesn't have a specific photographer in mind, I think they are the ones that pitch photographers that they think could be a good fit too.
Yeah. But also anyone.
Who agents think, too, yeah, I feel like, right?
Anyone who you think might hire you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it's hard sometimes to find, you know, names. Aster and Rep actually posted something recently about like finding emails for people. I mean, obviously you can buy emails, but there are sites out there that, let's say you're trying to find someone at Whole Foods and you know the person that's a creative director at Whole Foods, but you don't know their email. And it basically gives you like the configuration. Like, it's probably ren.fuller@wholefoods.com, you know, things like that. But yeah. And then someone else asked, where to begin with learning about charging, usage rights, and licensing. A photoeditor.com. This is basically a podcast about photoeditor.com.
Yeah. Which, by the way, I emailed Rob and he's super down to come on the show. So we should have him on actually to talk about all of this stuff because I feel like he knows all.
Yeah, we should. We will do that. Coming season 3.
Yes. So we had a great question from my agent. Can we expect a season 3? I think so.
Yeah.
I love this podcast.
I guess we didn't really start this episode by saying this is probably our last episode of the season. We're going to enjoy summer and really just take time to like get people interviewed. I think scheduling is a tricky thing with
two
working photographers and plus a third. But I definitely think, you know, we wanted to have someone talk about like finance and usage, licensing, like all the things. So maybe we can have someone come and talk about stock and how like to diversify your income through there too.
But also, this is a shameless call out, but if the hardest part for me is the editing, it takes a lot of time and we are not making any money off this podcast, but if anyone is interested in editing,
yes,
it takes me, who doesn't know totally what I'm doing, about 4 to 5 hours to edit. It's very simple, I think. So if anyone is open to editing it for, I mean, as little as possible at this point, because we're making no money off this podcast, but it would be a huge help. Just let us know if it's something.
We've explored like doing a Patreon or things like that, but
we don't have time.
And really the podcast, we want to be able to give the podcast to everybody, you know, without a charge. And we've looked into like potential sponsorship. So if you know someone that wants to actually sponsor the podcast so that we can at least pay for an editor, get in touch. And then, you know, just continue emailing us with questions so that we can start building that out for season 3.
Yeah. And I think for season 3, this one, we got super excited to talk to photographers that we really admire. And that was super fun. But I also really miss talking to you, Jennifer. So I think season 3 will probably be a healthy mix of everything that we've been doing.
Yeah. So and I think we'll try to open it up to not only photographers, but, you know, people wanted to hear from prop stylists and food stylists and
producers. I would love to have some producers on.
We wanted to have a producer on this season, but we just didn't get around to that.
Yeah. I have someone that's interested. So yeah. I can't wait to have her on.
Okay.
Yeah. So we have a lot of ideas. So we'll definitely expect a season 3 at some point.
At some point. Maybe January. I think.
I was going to say this fall, but I feel like you're so much more realistic.
You always do that. And then I'm like, that's not realistic because then we're going to get into the holidays.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think so. Because also you might be going on a big trip. So then, you know, then you're going to be, but I think we can still record.
Yeah, yeah, we'll be recording. Yeah.
I do think people miss the
weekly. That's never going to happen again. If I'm editing it, it's never going to happen again.
I mean, okay, so call to the community. We really would love someone to edit our podcast so that we can take that off of Ren's plate.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thanks, everybody.
We love you.
We love you.
And I love you, Jay Chong.
I love you too, Ren.
If you have any comments, questions, or ideas on future episodes, email us at photodump.club@gmail.com.
Photodump was created by Ren Fuller and Jennifer Chong. Thank you to Sam Fuller for our cover art and overall tech support. Our music was created by Daniel Smith.
You can find me on Instagram at jchongstudio.
And me at Ren_Fuller.
Thanks for listening.